once you start to recognize that that negative voice saying, stop, don't do it, it won't work, blah, 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 isn't you, you can change it and you can shift it. And my challenge for the scientific types is let's do an experiment.
Welcome to the Happy Engineer Podcast, the place where we help engineers to build your career, balance your life, and be happy. My name is Zach White, a former engineer now turned CEO, lifestyle engineering coach, and your host. I believe that success without fulfillment is failure. Join me each week as we bring you an inspiring leader or message to help you enjoy both. Thanks for investing time with me today. Now let's do this. Are you a liar? After talking with our guest today, I have to say the truth is, you are. Now, stay with me on this one. Do you lie to yourself? Is the negative voice in your head really you? Where does the little devil on your shoulder come from anyway? I think we all need to hear this conversation as I examine the stories of our lives with veteran coach Robert Peterson. He is host of the Add Value to Entrepreneurs podcast and founder of Add Value to Life Coaching. He began his entrepreneurial journey after 20 years in ministry and before that, service as a United States Marine. Hoorah! Now Robert helps you shift your mindset and reach your dreams. He has over 20 years of coaching leaders and offers a unique perspective guiding professionals to get out of your own way. He helps you see what is written on the instructions outside the box that you're sitting in. I want to remind you that listening to podcasts like this one doesn't change your life. Taking action on what you discover changes your life. So if you're ready for action and ready for more in your career, then join the Happy Engineer community online and get access to bonus content from this episode and live coaching with me in our free group. The link is right there in the show notes. I know you will enjoy this conversation with Robert. It's time to find the true story of your career and life. Are you an engineer who is listening because you want to reach the next level, but don't know how to get there? I know exactly how you feel and would love to chat about how to get results. A lot of engineers want help. They want to accelerate their career, but what holds them back is that most of the career coaching services out there are generic and they just want you on the phone to get a commitment and a credit card. That's why on our career clarity calls, we do it a bit differently. We are there to help you gain a deeper sense of clarity on the barriers you're facing so you can choose the right next step for you. It's totally free, there is no commitment, and that call is meant to serve you. And if we're a good fit, we've carved out a limited number of $500 coaching sessions also for free, which we want to give our podcast listeners first. Setting up a career clarity call is easy. Go to careerclaritycall.com. You can grab that link in the show notes or just memorize it. careerclaritycall.com. All you're going to do is click the big orange button, select a time on our calendar that works for you, and my team will begin pouring into your career so you can get to that next level. Chat soon. Robert, awesome to have you on the Happy Engineer podcast. Can't thank you enough for making time to be with me and the happy engineers out there, man. Welcome.
Well, Zach, thank you so much for having me. I feel privileged to have this conversation.
Well, I'm excited because what you do and the life that you have lived brings so much to the table for this conversation. I'm going to be hard pressed to limit us to 30 or 40 minutes today. But I want to read something I found when I was just getting to know you and the material of the incredible work you do with Add Value to Entrepreneurs. Because when I read it, I thought to myself, wait, is Robert talking about entrepreneurs or engineers? And here it is. You said, entrepreneurs get stuck in their head, challenged by their thoughts, the voice in their head, and their beliefs. We help them get out of their own way. And I read that and thought, wait a minute. You could just replace the word entrepreneur with engineers who I coach and the work we do at OACO, and it would make perfect sense. Engineers get stuck in their head, challenged by their thoughts, the voice of their head, and their beliefs. Robert, can you just tell me a little bit about what is it that makes that true for entrepreneurs? And I want to get curious around how much the engineer and the entrepreneur may be more the same than I've ever considered. But tell us about that idea. Where does that come to life, and what have you found in coaching entrepreneurs?
To be honest, I think it's a human idea. So the reason it applies to entrepreneurs and engineers is because so far they're all humans.
So far, good distinction.
It's shifting fast, and iRobot could be the next iteration, but I think there's this human condition, and it really, the longer I've worked in this, the more I've recognized that the things I learned in ministry, and in ministry, it was the battle between good and evil, the focus of for people to shift their habits and shift their thinking to do good is really the same battle that's happening in everybody's mind in trying to apply themselves to their work. And so there's this negative voice inside your head that's telling you you're not good enough, you can't do it, you're not strong enough, or you shouldn't make money, or it's never going to work that way. All of these lies, because that voice inside you, and I just use the devil, but the negative voice is not you. It is not your voice. It's coming from outside of you. And that's hard for people to grasp. It's coming from outside of you, but that voice is trying to limit your potential. And some might say it's your subconscious trying to keep you safe. If you want to blame that. But when I was a kid, we had cartoons, right? And the cartoon had Daffy Duck in the evil devil outfit and Bugs Bunny angel outfit encouraging you. And basically, the war in your head is between the positive and the negative. And the majority of people are living by default and allowing that negative voice to be the one that's in control. And so the things that lead to burnout, like you're talking about on your shows most of the time, is living by default, feeling like life's out of control. I have to do all the things my boss tells me to do. I have to do all the things my wife tells me to do. I have to do all the things my HOA tells me to do. I have to do all the things my government tells me to do. I have to do all the things that are just required for me to just get up and survive on a daily basis. And they're miserable. But there's another side where you get to choose. And you get to wake up every day and you choose joy and you choose to love your wife and you choose to do the things that your boss is telling you to do. And you choose to do the things that you need to do to take care of your kids and your family. But in the choice is so much power and freedom that it alleviates some of the misery that's on that other side that feels so out of control. Mm.
So let me back up to this idea that the negative voice is not you. That's a really important statement that I'm not sure everybody would agree with or not. And it also begs the question, what is the difference then between the voices that are me and are not me? So is the good voice always me and the bad voice always not me? And so Robert, tell me a little bit about how you distinguish what is me, what's not me. And then the good voice, the bad voice, is that the clear line? Or let's unpack that a little bit, because I think it's super interesting how we're relating thoughts to kind of a core identity.
Absolutely. Well, and I think the negative voice does become you if you allow it to. Hmm. So I can't say whether the negative voice is somebody else or not wholly, because they become what they believe. They become the stories they tell themselves. Those become your beliefs. And then those beliefs stop you from taking action, typically, instead of being beliefs that encourage you to take action, right? So 95% of our decisions are made by our subconscious mind without us controlling them and without us having any role in them. And so if 95% of the choices that you're making in a day, are those choices happening for you or against you?
Yeah.
And the majority of people aren't taking control of those. They're not intentional in their living. And then they feel like their life's totally out of control, because guess what? It is. There's some grain of truth in that, because their life's totally out of control.
So this idea of adopting the negative voice as a core belief, you know, whether it's you just repeated it enough times that it becomes something you've you believe by default, to your point, or maybe it's even a conscious decision to buy into that negative voice. Is that the core concept that you would say that separates what is me from what is not me? That taking it on as something that I deeply believe or as a conviction now, whether that's conscious or subconscious?
Absolutely. I think our beliefs are at the foundation of everything, and our beliefs are based on the stories we tell ourselves. And the only way to change our beliefs is to change our stories and change our actions. The way we program our subconscious mind is through repetition and action. So if you want to change a habit, you want to become a runner, well, guess what you need to do? A, you got to start telling yourself, hey, I'm a pretty good runner. But you got to start putting on running shoes at some point. And then you got to put on running shoes every single day for 21 days. I don't care if you go out and run, but at the end of 21 days, your brain is going to say, I think I'm a runner. And you're going to put on the running shoes, and then you're actually going to go out and run. Because that's how the brain understands your identity. Mm-hmm. And it's founded in our beliefs. One of the failings of the church and religion in general, I think, is because they get caught up in programming us for these beliefs around salvation or these beliefs around who we're following. But we're not questioning some of the beliefs that were planted in us by our parents and our teachers and important people in our lives, or the boss that told us, you know, I don't think you've got what it takes to get us to the next level. And a boss, a person of influence, says that impacts, that puts a limitation, right? A limiting belief that's holding you back, that unless you explore your beliefs, unless you explore why you believe that, you can't undo it, and it holds you back. And I guarantee the majority of your audience has limiting beliefs around money. They have limiting beliefs around time. They have limiting beliefs around their self-worth. And all of those, the majority of those, were planted by somebody else. They were planted in a moment of frustration a lot of times, right? When your parent says something to you in frustration, and, oh, you're never going to be good enough, or you're never going to be able to do that, right? And it's a moment of frustration or a moment of protection, right? I'm going to be an NBA player. And your parent says, well, maybe you shouldn't aim so high. And so the majority of these beliefs have been planted by one simple statement that our subconscious grabbed onto and has held onto for years.
Yeah.
And made it a story of who we are. One of the biggest challenges, especially for engineers, is now they've gone to school, now they're hired, and their identity is based in, I'm an engineer. And so many of us, we go to networking events, we go to these events, and what's the first question anybody asks you?
What do you do?
And what do you answer?
Your I'm an title, engineer.
I'm an engineer. Well, that's not true. You're also a husband and a father and a churchgoer potentially, and a mountain biker. And why do we pick the career as the one thing that we identify with in front of other people instead of the impact we're leaving on the world, right? So now I want to ask, what are you doing to change the world? Because engineering may or may not change the world. There's some really cool engineering out there that absolutely has changed the world. Yes. But the majority of it's bread and butter engineering that's just keeping us alive and safe. Which is true and important, but
such an interesting distinction you're making, and came up in the context of faith. It comes up in the context of career and family, and I see this a lot as well in the work I do, Robert. That organizations, whether it be religious groups, be companies, parents, whatever authority or thing we're talking about, focuses a lot on what beliefs they want you to hold that align with the values and the, you know, what we stand for, the identity of that thing. But we don't spend a lot of intentional time asking the questions about which beliefs we've been programmed with that are not the ones that are going to help us in our lives and creating what we want to create, and how many were put there unintentionally by somebody who meant well, but it could actually be a huge problem or limitation for us. So for the work you've done and just your approach to this, how does somebody get out of the endless loop, the default setting? What's sort of step one to break out of default mode and actually begin engaging with beliefs in a productive way that moves your life forward?
Yeah, for the most part, I don't go backwards, right? And if somebody's experienced trauma and some of those negative things, I want to help them rewrite that story. But typically, you need a therapist for those things. But the way you tell the story to yourself about your life, about who you are right now, is really important, because our self-worth is so powerful in what we're doing. and future pacing, right? Figuring out what is the future that you really want? What is the thing that can drive you to make some changes? Change is hard. Everybody says they don't like change, but the truth is they just don't want to work very hard. But you don't have to work very hard to change your mind. It's actually really easy. It just takes repetition and action. And so you've got to know the story you want to tell yourself about what's true for you.
Well, but let's pause really quick, because I think this is an important concept, and I want to take it out of the conceptual. You know, we're talking about your story, and I think it's a bold assumption that everybody actually knows, like, what does that mean? What does that look like? So can you actually make it as tangible as possible for us, Robert? If I was to say, what is the story that you're believing? What does that really mean and look like? And what would even the process of questioning it or changing it involve?
All right. So one of the exercises that I'll do is create a timeline. And if the middle of the timeline is normal, and then you've got the positives, right? So I got my Eagle Scout. I got promoted to sergeant in the Marine Corps, right? Those are high points, right? I got married. Ooh, I got divorced. That one goes down here, right? So create this timeline, and you can draw it however you want. You make it a bar graph, but you're going to have the highs and lows of your life.
Got it. Yep.
And then ask yourself the question, how is the feelings I feel about this event impacting who I am today? Right? So you and I both have experienced divorce. And then I went into Christian ministry, where a lot of people say divorce is a disqualification. And so there were people in my circles that believed I was disqualified to do the job that I was doing. And so I'm a firm believer in the power of forgiveness. I'm a firm believer in mistakes don't define us. And I believe that both on my faith side and in the world, right? If you're still breathing, you've got a chance to make amends, and you've still got a chance to do something better. But I also know that I can't change my divorce. I can't undo it. It'll never go away. But if I live every day of my life since then in shame or guilt, which are super low vibrational frequencies, mm-hmm. I will live the rest of my life in misery and yuck, right? And your listeners can download the emotional scale and look at, it's rated, right? Our bodies vibrate. And the power of forgiveness is a me and me deal. It's regardless of what my ex-wife feels. It's regardless of, I have to forgive myself for the mistake that I made. And then I have to move forward. And move forward means that I'm going to let go of it. I'm not going to talk about it. And I'm not going to beat myself up over it. And that's a commitment that I make to myself about that event.
Yes.
And there's people that are still can go back to those events and simply make that commitment, right? Well, I'm not going to talk about this one anymore. Until I can get past it, right? And now you can talk about it because A, it's a long ways back. And B, I've forgiven myself. And so there's huge power in being able to tell others the same story, right? So look, you need to let go of this piece. You can't undo it. You have no control over the past. But the story I tell myself, what did I learn? What did I learn from that marriage that makes this marriage so much better?
So I want to make sure I'm tracking with the exercise. We're looking at this timeline of our life. We're capturing these peak experiences and these valley, negative experiences, as we think back. And Robert, is this something you would just go back as far as you can remember? Is there any point?
I mean, significant memories, right? Significant to the person.
Yeah.
Right. And they're going to do it and they're going to figure out they missed a couple and they'll go, Oh, this one was really important, right? And they'll go back in and draw it in. The exercise is really the intentionality of, what stories am I telling myself? That's the recognition that starts to come out of this. What stories am I telling myself?
And that key question, so what's the story I'm telling myself about this event? Or it was something about how are my feelings
How is how I feel about this event impacting who I am today?
Today. And so that's the key connection to make in terms of what the story is taking that thing from my past and asking how the story or feelings around that, which are in some ways synonymous for this exercise, impacting me today. So not how did I feel back then,
right?
And how did it impact me then? It's the question about this being a part of my life story. How have I pulled that meaning into the present And what does that say about who I am and what I believe today?
Exactly. And what it starts to do is raise your awareness. And so then all of a sudden you have the memory of my dad saying, well, you're not very smart. You'll never do that. You'll never be good. And how does that make, how do the feelings from that impact me? Mm-hmm. And being able to, so now it gives me a chance to change the story. Now, this isn't therapy. This is changing the story to serve me rather than allowing the story to hold me back and make me a victim, right? And so I can't change the event. I can't undo the divorce. But what I can do is start to recognize the lessons and how that's made me a better man. Yes. And so now I turn the story to, how does it serve me? How can this event serve me? And even how can the statements my dad made serve me? Well, now I'm mature enough to recognize maybe dad had something going on that day. Maybe dad was struggling with something in his past. And maybe it had nothing to do with me at all. Maybe I was just irritating him in a moment of his busyness, right? Because now I've been a father and I recognize the things we say aren't always what we intend. Yeah. And the consequences of the things we say aren't always what we intend. And so, and I have a great relationship with my father. He was a fantastic man. And yeah, he spanked me and yeah, he yelled at me and his bark was far worse than his bite and I deserved most of it. So,
so maybe to use that example, Robert, what was the process like for you in choosing a new story around that area of your life? Would you be willing to share an example?
So one of the biggest is money, and it's even been recently. So I spent 20 years in Christian ministry. I spent 10 of that in South America serving as a missionary. We raised our own support. And there was this idea that missionaries should live on less. Oh, you're living in another country. You can do it with less money. And then even missionaries to the level of, we spent this week eating rice and beans for the glory of God. This idea that you're sacrificing for the glory of God. Well, 98% of the church population is living their normal life, but throwing us their pennies. And so the money mindset issues, and the church uses some of the Bible verses, right? So the idea of root of all evil, the love of money, but you tie money to evil. Scripture also says that you can't serve two masters. You can't serve God and money. But what they don't talk about is that money doesn't have to be your master. Money doesn't have to be the competitor against God. You can love God and still earn money. And so wrestling with those stories and the stories that I told myself about money were very challenging.
Yes.
And once I recognize the limitation, then I have to change my relationship to money and I have to change the story that I'm telling myself. And so part of my morning routine for months was, I love money. Money loves me. I can do more for God's kingdom with more money. God wants me to have money. In fact, earning more money is a way of honoring God. I don't need to play small to honor God. And so changing the story in my own life, it has a huge impact
on
my ability to raise money and earn money.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing is, the more you dig into the scripture and you look at the truth of it, it's the negative voice, I'll say the devil, that manipulates that Bible verse the minute people hear it, that you can't serve two masters, God and money. Satan has you. He's completely taken that Bible verse and church is teaching it in good faith, but everybody listening to it doesn't hear it in good faith. They hear it in fear. Mm. And if you're hearing it in fear, then that's the negative side that's winning, because fear is such a low vibration. But you hear what Jesus says, and Jesus talks about the parable of the talents, which is very clearly a money verse. And he's very clearly talking about multiplication, talking about using money to earn more money for the good of the kingdom.
Yeah.
And so we need to be willing to say, no, you don't, you're missing it. You have to earn money. And I wrote my book between Christmas and New Year's. And the very first thing I start out with is, you became an entrepreneur, you became an engineer to earn money. It's okay to earn money. You want to earn money. In fact, I want you to say it right now. I want to make money, period.
I want to make lots of money, Robert. I'll tell you that right now.
But Zach, it can't be about the money.
Amen.
That's the challenge. And that's the challenge for so many people, is because money's become the end game. Money's become the end game. You get a job, the first thing you talk about is how much is the salary, right? And of course, we don't talk about it because we're told not to talk about money. So we're not allowed to talk about our salary, which is why we have salary separations and disparities between genders and races. And you know what? If we talked about money, those disparities would all go away.
So Robert, let me ask this question, because this is an interesting topic. In one way, the conversation's going all over, but what's interesting is we're hovering around the same core, really important reality that every engineering leader needs to ask themselves. You know, what are the beliefs that I hold in these domains that really matter to me, like money, like faith, like my career, like my family? But I've heard before, and I'm curious, I feel like you have to have encountered this with your clients as well, or the people you interact with, people who struggle to adopt this idea that it's the right thing to do, or it's okay for me to just change my story about something because that's in higher service of the life I want to live. And somehow by brainwashing myself and changing my own beliefs, if that's even possible, you know, woo-woo craziness here, that's the road to happiness and success and wealth and all these things that I want. And a lot of the engineers that I work with really value this idea of, well, I'm a realist and I don't just make stuff up. And how is lying to myself, you know, because that actually happened, or this is the truth, or there's just this resistance to the idea that somehow I can just change these things and my life will shift. I'm going to pretend that this stuff, you know what I'm saying? I kind of playing devil's advocate here, but when encounter that kind of person,
of course,
how do you help them to see that we're not talking about just lying to ourselves? Maybe you take it. Like, what would you say?
They're already lying to themselves because they're already lying to themselves in the idea that they have control. The majority of the stories they're telling themselves are already lies. In fact, I would challenge them to believe that the majority of the stories they're telling themselves aren't really true either, but they've never questioned them.
Yeah. Maybe this is a bombshell question then, Robert, but I feel like what comes out of that is, then how do we individually discern which stories are true?
Well, I'm going to say you get to choose. And if you get to choose, why not choose the one that leads to your destiny and your dream and your impact and joy, rather than choose the one that leads to misery and death?
Woo! That's a powerful answer. You get to choose. Okay, so let me take that and run with it then. Earlier, we talked about the default versus the choice. Other than the pure scientific answer that the subconscious mind is driving the bus, 95% of the horsepower between our ears is the subconscious, and we can easily just blame that setting of our psychology as the reason. But why do you think so few people exercise the 5%, the agency, the choice to go change the story and make this happen when the prize is clearly worth it? What do you think it is that holds us back from getting into that freedom of choice?
So the brain's default is survival. That lizard part of the brain defaults to survival, and it's content with comfort. Mm-hmm. And so we have so many comforts, right? You and I aren't going out hunting for water. You and I aren't going out hunting for dinner. You and I don't have to do any of that hard work. And so the brain is very content with that because we're safe. And so challenging that survival instinct of the brain is unique.
Yes.
It's different. And most people don't feel like they have control. Most people don't feel like that voice in their head is outside of them. And so once you start to recognize that negative voice saying, stop, don't do it, it won't work, blah, 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 isn't you, you can change it and you can shift it. And my challenge for the scientific types is, let's do an experiment.
Yeah.
I want you to try it. I challenge you to try it.
Be an engineer. Run the test. Yeah, I think that's great.
Because I know what will work. I've seen way too many results. Way too many results to doubt.
I love your story. And I want to actually unpack this, because part of why your conviction around this is so strong is you have lived it. You have experienced it. And now you've coached others to success through this. I'm curious for you. One of the things, Robert, that I coach my clients in is, you know, I believe that we as humans are three parts, and not everybody would agree with this. Maybe some people would say spirit, soul, and body. You could say, you know, faith, mind, and physical or nature, like whatever, however you want to split it. And again, not everybody agrees with this breakdown, but it's how I coach my clients. And I think about these three things as separate. The part of me that is spiritual or faith-based, the part of me that is my conscious mind and will, and then this part of me that is my physical, the touch and feel part of my body, right? Well, what I think is amazing about your story is you've done what I believe is work that requires incredible courage and confidence and a willingness to challenge that survival instinct on all three of these. If I was going to say, like, what's the most demanding physical domain of courage, the Marine Corps would be on that list, and you were a Marine. If I was going to say, take the faith one, you know, what's the hardest place to go challenge courage and faith? Being a full-time, you know, in ministry as a overseas missionary, like, that's as tough as it gets. And then in mind, coaching entrepreneurs and being an entrepreneur, you know, the journey of entrepreneurship, probably as courageous a domain as I can think of in that. So, like, you've lived all three in big ways. And I'm curious for you, which of the three would you say, if you had to pick one, was the place where you actually were forced to develop this skill of awareness of lies, changing the stories, and shifting your mindset in this whole world? Which of the three was the toughest?
I'm going to say faith, because the spiritual side, I could see the spiritual truths in the teachings of Think and Grow Rich and of Wallace D. Wattles and of James Allen. And then the Bible, which has been my guidebook for 20 plus years of leading. And there's many people in the world saying that those two were incompatible, that this is new age thinking and self-determination is against God. And I think the truth is there's this huge overlap, obviously. And these people are speaking truth and the Bible is speaking truth. And when you allow both to be in their space, it's like, okay, now I see this, right? And there's many in the new age and self-development side that don't believe in God and believe in universe. There is definitely a spiritual element, regardless of whether you believe in God and want to acknowledge that, you're missing out on a huge aspect of this. And so I appreciate, and we are spiritual beings, I believe, put into a physical body, given a mind to think. And that's what differentiates us from everything else that's been created on this planet or lives on this planet. But that ability to think is the one that we don't use. And I know the engineers are listening to this going, I use my brain all the time. You're right. You're using it like a calculator or a computer, but you're not thinking new, creative, imaginative. And that's what the brain is really designed to do. And yes, there's lots of people that do it. You can look in the room around you, and everything that was invented in the room around you was invented by a human being who's using his brain to think of something that didn't exist before he got there. And that's the power of thinking, right? Mm. That's where creation really comes in. And that's where your engineers are going to be tapping into greatness, right? When they can tap into that mastermind and they tap into spirit and they've aligned their spirit and their mind and they have a healthy body to use it, that's when amazing, incredible new things happen, like suspension bridges and skyscrapers and airplanes, right? It took engineers a great deal of courage to step out of, well, this is how we've always done it, to what if we tried this? But that only happens when you tap into the thinking side.
Yeah. So Robert, if Becky, the engineering leader, is out there listening and she's asking the question right now, like, wow, what Robert just said sounds amazing. I want to tap into more of that, but I don't know where to begin. How do I stop using my brain like a calculator and start using it for this kind of visionary, imaginative creation power that Robert's describing? What would you say to Becky? What's the first step moving toward that kind of life? Is there a resource? Is there an action? Is there a place to go? Like, what do you recommend?
I mean, there's tons of resources. Obviously, Tony Robbins takes cold baths. He has meditation time. He has thinking times, you know, learning to write with your opposite hand, learning to brush your teeth with your opposite hand, but allowing yourself to recognize an openness to the imagination. I think one of the biggest challenges in our culture is just giving yourself space to be creative, to be artistic. And one of our challenges, I think, in the Western world is we've limited creatives to artists, dancers, and actors and painters. And if you don't, you know, I can't draw and I can't dance and I can't sing, so I'm not very creative, right? And so I think a lot of the folks in the engineer space, right, they're very maybe spreadsheet oriented. They're analytical. That's the word.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, very analytical. And they don't spend a lot of time in the creative space. And so allow yourself some time in that creative space. I think it's even as simple as spending some time in an adult coloring book. Give yourself the freedom to do something that even simple things that are outside of the ordinary. But I think it's space. Just give yourself space. I have two thinking days a week. I spend 30 minutes on my calendar and it's just thinking time. And it's just, most of the time, it's just writing, allowing all the thoughts in my head to just write. And I wish I could just connect it to the paper. And so I wouldn't have this weakness in between, right? The weakness is my hand and my ability to just write, but allowing my thoughts to just flow. And the more that I've practiced that and the more that I've done that, the more ideas and more things that just start to come from that process. Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. I've given myself space to allow my mind knows if I've got ideas, Robert's going to honor them. And I think the majority of people get ideas and they don't honor them. They just say, oh, that's not for me. And they kill the dream. They kill the idea. And then 6 months later, they see it on a television commercial selling for $19.95. And they're like, that was my idea.
Yeah.
And they didn't do anything with it. And so that idea goes to somebody else. I think ideas are very spiritual. Money's very spiritual. And ideas and money, they like to work. They don't like to get stuck. And so if you're holding on to money or you're holding on to ideas or you're ignoring them, they need to be honored. They need to be put to work. They need to be used. And so writing them down and exploring them and sharing them. And maybe that idea is not for me, but you know what? My buddy, Zach, man, he's got that Happy Engineers podcast. This is perfect for him. Let me call him.
I love that.
And that allows the ideas to, that's what ideas were designed for, right? Our relationships and using just, they were designed to do stuff, not just sit stuck in your head.
I hope Becky's feeling the passion from this, Robert. I am. It's like, I want to go get some creative time set aside right now. And maybe there's a temptation for the uber intellectual in me. And I know a lot of engineers get labeled as this overthinking, very serious minded kind of people. It's like, did Robert just say adult coloring book? Like, I'm out. You know, that's not happening. But honestly, you know, and for those who don't know Robert's work, you know, helping incredible leaders and entrepreneurs build amazing businesses. And it really is sometimes as simple as finding that outlet. I love that. And I hope people are inspired to get after it. Robert, so much stuff to consider and dig into here. It's hard to know how to bring it all together into a single concept, but we always end in the same place. I'm excited to hear where you take us with this. But great engineering, great coaching, you know, the work that you do with entrepreneurs, it has in common that questions lead and the answers follow. And we want to ask great questions in our life as engineering leaders, as entrepreneurs, as husbands, as wives, as all these roles we play, asking great questions. So for that leader out there who's been listening to our chat today, if they want that happiness, that imaginative, creative, empowered, choiceful lifestyle that we just talked about, what would be the best question you would lead them with today?
What's holding you back? What is preventing you from doing what you want to do? And then exploring, of course, what is it that you really want to do?
What's holding me back? Robert, if somebody wants to either explore that question with you or get connected with the amazing work that you're doing with your podcast, with your business, your coaching, where can people reach out and get more Robert in their life?
So it's addvalue2life.com. And if you put in addvalue2life.com, I'm holding up a very large little book. It's about, it's actually 800 pages. So this is an 800 page book. My wife and I are both authors in this book, and it's called A Dose of Hope. And we'll give away the digital copy of this Dose of Hope. It has both our stories. It has the story from Frank Shankiewicz, who created Make-A-Wish Foundation, and other stories of hope and just good stuff. So DOSE stands for dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, and endorphins, which is what happens in your brain when you experience joy and you experience happiness and you elevate your vibration. And so if you go to addvaluetolife.com/DOSE, D-O-S-E, we'll send you guys that ebook and the opportunity to enjoy those stories of hope. We want to share more hope and give more hope in the world. And add value is all about leaving the world a better place than we found it. And so leaving lives are better than we found them.
So good. And, you know, I can't say enough about Robert and his wife and their team, the business that they're running. You know, you don't have to be an entrepreneur to get tremendous value from the book. It's such a generous offer. You know, this is not like a 2-page ebook you get from a lot of places. It's an incredible resource. So please go out, addvaluetolife.com. I'll make sure that's in the show notes. All the other resources we talked about on the show today will be there. You know where to find those at thehappyengineerpodcast.com. Jump out, get the bonus content from today's episode. And Robert, thank you again so much for making time and really challenging our minds today and those stories that we hold. I know my story feels inspired to level up after this chat. So thanks again, and really appreciate you and your generosity and the value you add everywhere you go. It's tremendous. Thanks again.
Well, Zach, thank you so much for the great questions and the great conversation.
This episode has been brought to you by Massive Action and Decisive Leadership. Okay. No, those are not companies you can just buy success from, but they are qualities you must master if you want to build your career and balance your life. So to help you out, I'm offering my most popular ebook, 49 Things You Must Do to Accelerate Your Engineering Career, for free on our homepage at oasisofcourage.com. If you will take action on just one of these simple tips each week, I promise you will experience a whole new level of results in the coming year. The problem is that we make everything too complex. Success at work is not rocket science. I mean, you might actually be a rocket scientist, and yet you're not getting the success you desire. One engineering senior manager told me that taking action on tip 34 by itself helped him feel happier at work and allowed him to start spending more quality time with his kids. To get your free copy of the ebook, just visit oasisofcourage.com, scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, and click download now. Happy engineer, I have two really important points I want to debrief with you while it's just you and me. The first one was the mention that Robert made of the emotional scale. Are you familiar with this? If not, I want you to go check it out. I would put a picture on the website, but it's not something that I created or have the rights to. So just Google emotional scale and check images. You're going to find all different varieties of the emotional scale out there. I originally learned about this from Esther Hicks, her writing under Abraham Hicks oftentimes. But the emotional scale is an incredibly useful framework that engineering leaders all need to look at for a couple of reasons. The first is that there are a lot of emotions, a lot of different emotions that we want to understand and explore in our life. And a lot of engineers like myself come into our adult lives with the 8-color crayon box of emotions. We're painting the color of our lives with only a few emotions to pick from. And when you have that reality that your emotional vocabulary, your emotional understanding is limited to only a few words, that creates a bias in your emotional life towards a very limited range, or in some cases, creating situations that become more extreme because of the vocabulary. So let me give you an example. Let's say one of the emotions that you are familiar with and use to describe a lot of situations is, I'm mad. I'm mad about this, I'm mad about that. Well, what can happen when mad is the only word that you use to describe that emotion of anger, right? When you use mad, you might say, ah, I lost my stapler. I'm so mad that I lost my stapler. You might also say, I am so mad that Billy lied to me about his work on this project, and now we're 2 weeks behind. Those are completely different situations. There's a very different level of emotion, a different intensity of emotion between those two situations. And if we paint the picture in our mind and in our heart around it as mad in both cases, what happens is that less intense situation around the stapler will escalate in its emotional intensity to match the kind of situations like someone lying to you, because subconsciously you only have one pattern, one emotional pattern, and that's the pattern around being mad. So anytime you decide I'm mad about something, you're going to fall into the emotional home, the emotional pattern in your experience of life and the way you act in this life that relates to all things mad. When you can start to paint with a more vibrant color palette of emotion, this emotional scale helps you to do that because it shows you that there's a spectrum of emotion. And think of emotion as energy in motion. You'll hear people talking about your vibe, the vibration of your emotion, and that's what they're talking about. And the scale talks about having a neutral, boredom, just being at that level point, and then negative vibrations, negative energy moving down the spiral and moving up a more positive vibration, a more positive energy towards really, really peak emotions. Well, as you build your emotional vocabulary, it allows you to experience things where they actually belong. So you might say, wow, I'm a little bit irritated that I lost my stapler, and I am in absolute rage that Billy lied to me. You see, those two words are different points on this emotional scale, and they communicate very different levels of emotional intensity. And when you know that and you have this understanding and you use these intentionally to describe the way that you're feeling and you connect different emotional experiences to these words, now your life starts to have more vibrancy, more color, more meaning, because you're not bucketing everything under just one word. Maybe another simple example would be worry. You know, you might be worried about your presentation tomorrow, or you might be worried that your best friend was just diagnosed with cancer and given a really challenging prognosis. Again, two totally different situations. And when we say I'm worried about both, well, the worry about your presentation, if it falls into the same emotional pattern as your worry that your best friend has been diagnosed with cancer, you're going to be way overdoing it on that negative emotion for your presentation. So I want you to look at this emotional guidance scale because it helps you to understand that there is a big spectrum of emotion and there's a lot of different words to help explain these levels, these intensities of both positive and negative energy and motion. But also, the second reason I want you to look at this is because it's very difficult to jump way up or way down the scale quickly. So if you are in a state of depression, grief, powerlessness, something very, very low on the emotional guidance scale, it is a huge leap for you to move from that place towards a place of optimism or even passion, enthusiasm, maybe joy and love. That is way too big of a step for you to make in a single moment. And this is where a lot of people get stuck emotionally, is you're in a negative place, you're in hatred, you're in rage, you're in grief, you're in depression. And somebody that comes along and says, hey, cheer up, have a positive outlook, just feel better, be more enthusiastic, it's okay. Well, those people mean well, they probably love you, but it's terrible advice because in any given moment, for you to just immediately jump from that low, low point on the scale to a completely different vibration is extremely difficult. So when you have mastery of the emotional guidance scale, what you know to do instead is move up bit by bit. In other words, if you're feeling fearful, if you're feeling insecure, ask yourself, what would be a different thought, a different way of approaching this situation that might just feel a little bit angering? You know, it triggers a little bit of hatred or rage in me. I'm angry about it, but I don't feel this grief or depression anymore. And if I can get to that place, Well, you know what? Maybe I'm not actually so angry anymore, but I'm just a little worried, or I have some doubt about this situation. You know, you can reframe your thinking around, oh, you know, just a bit of doubt here. It's not actually that angering anymore. I just feel some worry. Well, then you can move from there to a place of, you know what? I'm actually just a bit frustrated. This is irritating. It's bothering me, but it's going to be all right. I'm just a little frustrated. And then you get to that point of saying, actually, you know what? I'm just bored with this situation. I'm ready to move on to something else. And I feel a bit content. I'm feeling contentment right now. And actually, there's a bit of hope glimmering behind the scenes here. I have some hope that this situation is going to improve. And that optimism flows, and then enthusiasm flows, and you slowly move up the scale. When you have this understanding, it really opens a lot of doors for you to experience life in a new way and to build emotional mastery, which I believe is one of the important skills for every engineering leader to spend time with and develop. Emotional scale. Check it out. Look at these two things. The number of colors in your emotional crayon box, and thinking about moving up and down the scale a bit more gently, being easier on yourself in how you experience life, moment to moment. All right, I want to hustle on point number two because I already spent more time on emotional scale than I meant to, but it was the point around imagination. And here's all I'll say for today. We can revisit this another time or reach out to me in our Facebook group, the Happy Engineer Facebook group, a great place for you to ask questions and engage in a conversation around this. But imagination is one of the first things we lose or are told to lose by our parents, our teachers, the people who mean well for us when we're children. As we mature, you're building maturity and becoming such a sophisticated and intellectual person as you learn how to grow up. Well, one of the first things we're told to stop doing is to stop pretending, stop imagining. We lose our ability to imagine in vibrant, vivid color and detail, to pretend. And I'll tell you what, that is, without a doubt, one of the most important skills in how to use your mind, that 5%, your conscious mind. One of the most important things you can master is how to vividly imagine and pretend as if the goals and dreams that you have for your life are already true. Putting that cape on as a child and pretending to be Superman, it is actually the same principle that we want to do in our careers when you want a promotion. To begin to act as if you're already an engineering manager. To put on that cape of being the engineering director. To imagine and pretend what it would be like to be the CTO of this organization. Learning to flex that muscle is one of the most important skills you can master in your life. And if you don't understand what I mean by that or disagree, let's dig into it because it is so important. For the moment, I just want to tease you with that it's a tragedy that it's one of the first skills that's trained out of us as kids because it's one of the things we have to go back and retrain with every single one of our clients at Aweco who are seeking to create breakthrough, transformational results in their career and life. And I can tell you this, so far, it works every single time. I hope you're doing awesome. Keep crushing comfort. Create courage. Face those fears in your life. Make decisions. Take action. Jump in and share with us how it's going along the way. And until next time, let's do this. My friend, that's all we've got for this episode of the Happy Engineer Podcast. Thank you again for investing your time with me today. If you're like me, then maybe you'll take some notes and share this episode with your fellow engineers. Why? Because it will help you learn deeper, remember these insights, and take action. So share this episode with two or three friends just like you who are committed to building their career. Lastly, make sure to link up with us at oasisofcourage.com. Grab our free tools for career growth there in the resource hub and schedule a free call with our coaching team today. Please just share this podcast with anyone who you think might enjoy it. Until next time, remember to crush comfort, create courage, and let's do this.